This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Gregory Pardlow published his first book of poems in 2007, and his second book, Digest, won the Pulitzer Prize in 2015. Now he's at work on a collection of essays about his charismatic and complicated father. Pardlow Sr. was one of the few black air traffic controllers in the 1970s, and Gregory knew from an early age that his dad's job wasn't just a job. It was more like a calling.
When I was very little, my mother and I used to visit my father in the tower. I remember late at night looking out over the runways, and at times my father would give me the microphone and allow me to speak to the pilots who were coming in. In my very little boy voice, I would repeat whatever it was he told me, and the pilots got a kick out of that. We'd spend the night, my mother and I, we had our sleeping bags, and we'd sleep on the floor, and you know, he would get me up to point something out, and there would be a Cessna, like a twin-engine plane or something, and the way that the plane was landing in the wind, and you could see the kind of the fragility of these planes. It was almost like when I watched my father work, he seemed to be on stage in some ways. He was always a performer, so controlling air traffic was a form of public speaking, as far as he was concerned.
When Gregory Pardlow was 12, his father and thousands of other members of the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization, PATCO, went on strike. And that became a devastating turning point for organized labor in America.
This has been a highly emotional day for the air traffic controllers. Plain and simply, this was the day when rhetoric turned to reality.
It was Monday, August 3rd, 1981. My father, Gregory Anthony Pardlow Sr., and I walked the picket line outside of Newark International Airport. I had a picket sign that I carried very proudly and quite vigorously. I do remember people were throwing food at us from the highway, from cars. And it shocked me because I was so convinced that we were on the right side of history. I found myself very often at my father's side, looking up at him and being full of wonder at the possibilities of taking on the United States government, taking on the president of the United States.
This morning at 7 a.m., the union representing those who man America's air traffic control facilities called a strike.
So President Reagan came out in the Rose Garden the morning of the strike. There is a law against federal employees striking, but that law was rarely invoked. And so while the union members understood that this was an illegal strike, there still wasn't any expectation that anyone would go as far as terminating their jobs. That just didn't seem like a possibility.
It is for this reason that I must tell those who fail to report for duty this morning, they are in violation of the law, and if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
So when the president came out and announced that they were criminals and they were going to be prosecuted. The response had two points to the fork, and one was, we will hunt you down and put you in jail. And the other was, you will lose the only job for which you are uniquely trained. Before he died, I asked my father what it was like to work inside the control tower, because I knew I wanted to write about it. And this is what he told me. Think of each plane as an idea that pops into your head. They're all important ideas, but some aren't as pressing as others. Regardless, you have to keep all of them in mind. You can have more than a dozen ideas in mind at one time, and you have to make sure that they stay distinct. Let's say Teddy Pendergrass might be one idea, for example. Or funnel cake, aluminum siding, potholes, the Dagobah system, Bimini. Okay, that would be only 6 aircrafts. We're keeping it real simple. Somehow you have to keep them all located in your mind while you're handing some off, exchanging their information with other controllers. More than anything else, the one rule is spacing. The one true element of the universe. Emptiness. Incremental negations. Putting nothings between somethings. That's what makes order out of the chaos. After the president's ultimatum, my grandfather implored, practically begged my father to go back to work. But at that point, you know, egos are at stake.
All of those in favor of returning to work.
Reputations are at stake. And my father was the kind of man who was very particular about his reputation.
All of those opposed to returning to work and staying out for as long as it takes to get a fair and equitable contract, signify by saying yes.
I remember being at home and looking for my father to come home the first night of the strike. But I knew by the evening that my father was being pursued by the U.S. Marshals. There was a moment when two federal marshals came to the door of my house. And the memory that sticks with me is the way one of them opened his jacket and revealed both his badge and his gun at the same time. I'd like to think I said something smart or sarcastic to them, but I probably didn't. For a long time, we were kind of in this shock. And the mood of my family, you know, here we are, this comfortably middle-class family with an in-ground swimming pool in the back, and we literally had a picket fence. And we couldn't pay the light bill. We couldn't pay the electricity. We couldn't pay. And I remember we put a cooler out in the snow where we kept our milk and cheese and butter. Even then, I have to admit, it struck me as romantic. And that we were facing, as a family, we were facing this adversity together. And that somehow it would all work out. I wanted to be like my father. When I started writing, I was pretending, I was play-acting at being my father. What I did not see until I was an adult was that after the strike, he masked what I can presume to be shame now. He masked with drugs, cocaine in particular. So where he was this ebullient, you know, vivacious character, full of life, a lot of that was drug-induced. Reality took a long time to sink in because my parents never told me that the strike was over in a final way. Looking back on it, I understand how defeated he actually was, but at the time, I think I processed it as my father's in survival mode. My father is still fighting the good fight. The first job he had was as a night watchman. And I remember he despised that uniform. But his stubbornness, his sense of denial, his refusal to admit defeat can also be read as a kind of grit and perseverance. And in my life, I can certainly see, you know, certainly as a writer, my refusal to accept rejection has served me well. That youthful belief that everything's going to work out.
Gregory Pardlow says there is a whimsy and disregard for what is polite in his poetry. And that, he says, comes from his father. He recently wrote about his father's role in the PATCO strike for NewYorker.com. So before we go, here he is reading a poem about fathers and sons.
At 13, I asked my father for a tattoo. I might as well have asked for a bar mitzvah. He said I had no right to alter the body he gave me. Aping what little of Marx I'd learned from the sisters down the street, I said I was a man because I could claim my body and the value of its labor. This meant I could adorn it or dispose of it as I chose. Tattoos, my father said, are like children. Have one, you'll want another. I knew there was a connection between the decorated body and reproduction. This is why I wanted a tattoo. Yet I reasoned, not in so many words, his analogy only held in the case of possession, i.e., I possess my body, but cannot possess my children. His laughter was my first lesson in the human Ponzi scheme of paternalism. The self-electing indenture to the promise of material inheritance, men claiming a hollow authority because simply their fathers had claimed a hollow authority. Knowing I had little idea as to what my proposed tattoo might resemble, my father sent me to my room to sketch it using the pastels he had given me for Christmas. Based on his critique, he said, he would consider my request. But he'd already taken the shine from my swagger. How can I beautify what I do not possess and call it anything but graffiti? Now, Chris Rock says, my first job is to keep my daughter off the pole. Whether or not I agree with him, I get his point. As a father myself, I now see every mutinous claim of independence as the first steps toward my sweet peas falling in with a bad crowd. Richard Pryor says, we're bound to fuck up our kids one way or another. My father would split the difference. I made you, he'd say. I can unmake you and make another one just like you.
Gregory Pardlow reading Problema 4 from his book of collected poems, Digest.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.